Hello and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. So then, what is in a name? Well, today's guest has got a pretty good name for someone who's so passionate about motorcycle racing.
I'm Neil Champion. I'm a former TT and Manx Grand Prix racer. I still race a little bit on a lower level now. And I'm also the chairman of Andrews Racers Association on the Isle of Man.
I have to say, first of all, Neil, though, what a great name for somebody who does motorcycle racing. But you've never heard that before, have
I
you?
I have heard it before. And it can be, as you might imagine, a bit of a double-edged sword.
Take us back then. When did an interest in all things motorcycle related start for you?
Oh, right. So I'm an old chap now. I grew up in the 70s, got my first motorbike when I was 16. And I think that was, oh, crikey, 1979. So, and that was the thing then. And I had loads of mates, all at teenagers. That's what you did. You got into bikes then. And quite quickly, it was all encompassing. And I first came to the TT in 1984 and was absolutely blown away. I was like 21, 22 years old. And, you know, I thought it was amazing. And then I came every year for about 10 years. We used to rent a cottage up in Sandygate. And all we did was watch the racing and ride our bikes. That was the TT for us. And we went round and round and round and just did, oh, I'm just going for another lap. That was what we did in those days. And stayed interested in the TT. Real life changed. So I missed a few of them in the 90s. And then I dabbled in club racing a little bit through the 80s, and then I did a bit more late 90s, early 2000. Actually did some endurance racing just in the UK, not international. And then came across, I bought a big gang of people. I mean, like, I organised, Lord knows how and why I did it, a group of 30 of us to come to the TT. I knew all these like, kind of second generation or third generation of people. They were into bikes, and I was chatting to them, and they said, what, you've never been to the TT? You've never been to the TT? We need to go to the TT. And then I ended up organising it all, and we booked a hotel down in Port Erin, and we came across the year after Foot and Mouth. And at that point, and I must give him mention, I met a fella called Keith Mackay, who is also a come over, but he'd been living in the island for a couple of years at that point. He's still here, and he was obsessive about road racing, as I was becoming. And he said, right, yeah, he said, this is what you need to do to ride in the Manx Grand Prix. And he said, you need to get your national licence, you need to do this, you need to do that. And so that was what I worked towards, and did. I was a newcomer at the Manx Grand Prix in 2004, and that was kind of, in some senses, it was almost a tick in the box. It wasn't a bucket list, but I was still relatively old then. I was over 40.
That's not old at all, Neil.
Well, but you know, there's. I never heard the definitive statement about what the restriction is on how old newcomers can be now. But there's lots of talk of, oh no, you can't do it if you're 40 or 45 or something, and I didn't actually come back in 2005, but I came back in 2006 with a better bike and went a fair bit faster, almost scraped the top 20. And then I thought, right, I'm going to give it a real good go in 2007. Got a really good bike with some good support and cracked the top 10 at the Manx. And I thought, oh, right, that's it. This is it. This is what I do. So I got an entry for the TT, had the bikes lined up. I was in almost in every class, had a big bike and a 600 and so on. And also at that time, I'm not sure how many of the people listening to this will remember this, but there used to be another road race on the Isle of Man called Jerby South. That stopped in 2010. But I'd done that a couple of times. And there was a meeting in early May for that, which was a good for prep for the TT. So I thought, right, yeah, I'm going to take my bikes there, give them the run out on the roads, get them working over the bumps. But unfortunately, I ended up in Nobles with two broken legs and various other broken bones and stuff. So if you find the 2008 TT race guide, my name is in it, but I was flat on my back in hospital when the TT was running that year.
Were you listening to it? Could you bear to do that?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually, because I was out of hospital by the time... It's all a bit hazy, as you might understand. Yeah, I definitely caught some of it on the radio. But you know what? It was a proper serious one, you know? And actually, I was just glad to still be here. So it wasn't about, oh, if only. It was like, hey, I'm still here. So that it was all right, really. I mean, I was in a wheelchair for a couple of months, and then I was on crutches for 6 months after that. So that was me done with racing then in 2008, because I think I did it once. I think I had 7 operations in 18 months or something. Most of them were relatively small because I broke some bones in my hand, and they took a bit of fixing and things like that. But then I got back to fitness. I was fine, and I got back on a motorbike. I still had road bikes, and I remember December that year when I was signed off on the crutches. Right, you don't need to use crutches anymore. I thought, right, I can get on a motorbike, and I actually rode a bike to prove I could still do it. And I thought, okay, that's fine. Racing, I've been there. I've tried my best, and I nearly killed myself. And then the years ticked by a little bit, you know, and I was active, and I was doing all the things I used to do, and I was still riding bikes on the road, and it kind of started to just gnaw at me a bit, that I almost rode in the TT, but didn't quite. And my connections with the riding racing community on the island extended a bit. I said I had met my friend Keith, and I met a few other people, and also met a fella called Dave Clark, who I know really well now, and he is a chief sector marshal at the TT, but also he still rides a bit and was racing in those days. And he put together, he built a really good super twin, and I got chatting to him and said, you got anyone to ride that day for the TT? So yeah, I rode in the Southern 100, I think in 2012, and thought, yeah, I can still do this. Did a few meetings at Jerby, in fact, and a few other places, and then did the Southern 100. Didn't set the place on fire, but I was capable. And so I got my start in the 2013 TT. And a little claim to fame. There's a few people who've done this. You know Michael Russell, everyone calls him Jack Russell. He's famous for starting every TT, including the sidecar ones, right? Well, I can't compete with that because I've never done the sidecars. But in 2013, I started every single solo TT, including the TT0 for electric bikes.
And was that an aim? Was that something that
no,
you
had? No, it was just accidental.
I'm in every race.
Well, yeah, because I'd arranged, I had 1,000, a 600 and a twin. So I was basically in all those races. And there was, going back then, this was 10 years ago now, the TT0, there was a Manx team. Okay, the bike was built locally and I knew the fellas involved in that quite well. And in fact, I'd actually helped them, you know, pick some spanners up and just give them a bit of a hand with it. And my good friend Dave Moffitt was due to ride it, who's a local rider. And so I was in the paddock, signed up for my events and everything. And then I heard that Moffy had put himself in hospital. And so I phoned up another really good friend of mine, Andy Cowie, who was kind of organising that team. I said, do you need a rider, Andy? I said, I'm sure there's better people than me, but, you know, the practice week had started, so, you know, you couldn't ship anyone in. It had to be someone who was in the paddock. I said, but if you need someone, I'm available. And so I got a lap of practice on it, and they said, yeah, off you go, fella. So unfortunately, the bike did stop halfway round in the race, so I didn't get a finish on it that time. So there we go.
Ultimately, then, that dream was realised. You got to do your TT starts, all of them.
Yeah.
How did it live up to the expectation?
Yeah, it's really difficult to describe. And actually, when riders get talking, one of the things we know that we I've heard lots of us say this to each other, when you're talking about the TT, and it's the same with the Manx Grand Prix, really, you know, that circuit, the TT mountain course on a bike, if you talk to someone who's never done it, you cannot really put it into words. You can write 1,000, 1,000,000 words about it, but it's not really a rational thing. It's just so deep and powerful and emotional. Heading off down Bray Hill, that tap on the shoulder and off your head, it is just something that literally can't be really described. I mean, you can describe it, but you can't carry across the way it makes you feel and everything. And of course, at the time, it's not that your heart's in your mouth, but you mentally are in such a place that, you know, you're just completely focused. I mean, I'm, as hopefully it's coming across here, I'm quite a chatty, gregarious sort of fella. But on race days, or even actually in practice week, you know, when we're working towards practice, I just get quieter and quieter and quieter and withdraw a little bit. And I don't become, you know, nasty and horrible. I don't shout at people, but it's actually quite difficult to get me to engage because I'm just going into some other place. And everyone's like that in their own, everyone has their own mental way of dealing with it. And then you're on the bike and you're paddling forward to start to say it's in practice week, which is not so intense, but still you always know, especially at the TT, you know, every single time you go out, you've got to give of your best. Because in those days, there were more entries accepted than could start the race. So you genuinely were qualifying, and if you were in the bottom sort of 10 or so people, you likely might not get a start. So you still had to make sure you were giving of your best at every time, you know. So your brain's in this weird different place, you know, and you're kind of quite uptight, really, really focused, and actually, you know, nervous isn't really the right word. You're apprehensive or whatever, and you're on the bike, and then the tap on the shoulder and off you go, and all of a sudden, I kind of describe it as like putting your brain through the washing machine, because it just rinses out all the day-to-day nonsense that you tend to deal with, and the stuff you, even the stuff you've been worrying about, it's like, oh, did we change the tires, or did we do this, or did the guys do this sort of thing? You know, it's too late. You can't think about that anymore, and you're just completely focused on next apex, next breaking point. You're just looking for that hedge there, and then turn in, and that sort of thing. And I've had a couple of other experiences in life like this. I'm a musician as well, and when I'm playing again, you're so focused on what you're doing that it's really mentally, it just flushes everything else out. And because you've got no space for this other stuff, actually there is a little bit of your brain that is thinking there's these bizarre thoughts. So, you know, I can remember coming along Sulby Strait and the spectators on the bank, and you know, they're watching me, and I'm thinking, wow, those guys are actually watching me race a bike here. And then I'm thinking, well, there were people stood on that bank watching Agostini 40 years ago or whenever it was, you know. And those little thoughts pop into your head. You're still looking for your braking marker, but it is absolutely an incredible experience. I mean, I do have a genuine actual TT replica, which is in the fair. I don't have a huge number of trophies, but I've got a handful, and that's, you know, obviously right at the top, front and center. Definitely the achievement I'm proudest of. But there is a flip side to this. I came back in 2014 and crashed in practice on a big bike. So the thing, I had a big 1000, it was 193 horsepower, a super stocker, and I always used to come in with, I used to describe it as my eyeballs are slightly enlarged, and I did realise that the bike was too fast for my brain. My brain was a tenth of a second behind the bike, whereas you need to be a few tenths ahead of the bike, really. So I crashed at Greber Castle and survived it, and I thought, now this, you're going to kill yourself like this, fella. Time to stop. And I was already planning to build a classic bike for what was then called the Classic TT, the Manx Grand Prix. Thought, like, that's what you're going to do. Just step it down a level, something a bit slower. And so from 2015 to 2018, I rode in the Classic TT, the Manx Grand Prix. I remember in the one of the TTs, I did two laps on the 1000, and I said, came back with my eyes wide open, and then got onto the 650 Twin, which will still do 150 miles an hour, but it had 100 less horsepower. And I remember pulling off down along the Glen Country Road and just going, oh, that's a bit better. Yeah, there's a corner up there, but it's not coming at me too fast, you know, and that was what I can ride at. So I built myself a 750 for the Classic Superbike class. And rode that. And also when they changed the regs, a little bit of an aside really, but for the proper Grand Prix 250s. So from 2016, you could ride a TZ 250, all that sort of thing. So I got myself one of those as well, which I'd never owned before. I'd never owned a pure thoroughbred two-stroke racing bike. So that was a hell of a steep learning curve. But it stopped in 2016. It actually ceased. 2017, it went from the sublime to the ridiculous. Just the linkage on the gear lever just came loose, and I was going all right then. And in 2018, I got a finish on it. But I'd already decided, 2018, I just realised that it was going to be my ninth event around the mountain course, and I thought, well, okay, you've done what you wanted to achieve, you are definitely not getting any faster. My personal life had changed a little bit, and I had, you know, the stakes I was playing with were a bit higher, as shall we say, and I just thought, no, it's time to stop when you decide to stop, really. So I'd already decided 2018 was going to be my last outing.
And you're still sure about that?
Yeah, even when I'm watching, because I'm very involved in marshalling now, since I've lived here, I'm watching the bikes go through. And sometimes you think, I can do better than that fella, but I know exactly how much commitment it takes, not in terms of actually being on the bike at the time, it's the preparation. You almost have to dedicate your life towards it. And I thought, no, I don't need to be doing that. And there's definitely places around the TT course, living here, and I'm riding my road bike, I'm thinking, I'm really glad I'm not trying to go flat out through here anymore. You know, there's places I love, there's places I absolutely, you know, Quarry Bends is just awesome, you know. But I'm really glad I don't have to go through Balaghery flat out anymore.
You have mentioned about living over here. Mm. How did that all come about?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. So I mentioned changes in my personal life. So relatively late in life, in my 50s, I got a new partner, and she, similar age to me, so we'd lived a life. We'd both been married previously. It was like, okay, you know, we're another 10 years before we retire, maybe. What are we going to do with our lives? And we threw it all up in the air. We were going to sell up, travel the world, or go and run a B&B in Cornwall, or all sorts of things. And she didn't really know much about racing, but she came with me to the Pre-TT Classic in 2018, I think. Or maybe it was 17, I don't recall. It was a beautiful spring May day on the island, and the island is so beautiful when the sun's out. And we were walking from the paddock into Castletown, and she just looked around. She said, well, I suppose we could move here. And I looked at her sideways. I said, don't joke about that, I said. I'll take you seriously, but, you know, let's think about it. She said, well, okay, right. So we actually had a proper serious conversation about it.
Tell me you brought her back in November just to see what it was like.
Actually, her first visit to the island was before that, because we came to stay with my friends in Ramsey for New Year. So she had seen it in winter. And so I said, okay, well, let's see if I can find a job here. It was 2018. I was in the Manx Grand Prix paddock up behind the grandstand, and I'd put my CV in to a few agencies on the island, and I got a phone call from one of them saying, can you go to an interview? I said, well, yeah. I said, I've only got jeans with me. I said, that's fine, it's not a problem. So I actually got a job while I was in the paddock at the Manx Grand Prix.
Do you think your 16-year-old self would have thought anything about moving to what was, I suppose, and still is to lots of people, the spiritual home of motor racing?
Yeah. I don't think my perspective on this is that different from people, but when I look back on my younger self, it seems like a different person. It doesn't feel like me anymore. Decades later, the experiences that make you into who you are. So he was a different guy, that young guy, and I don't know what he would have thought. So
here you are then, living in the Isle of Man and still motor racing, still not very far from your thoughts.
No, and I do still ride, and people say to me, I thought you'd retired. No, I still do the Pre-TT Classic, which is a lovely event, and it's so well organised. The Southern 100 Club are amazing. I know they call it the friendly races, but it is such a great paddock, and it's a brilliant atmosphere. And I remember after the break for COVID, so it didn't happen in, 2020 and 21. So I put my entry in 22, and I was really thinking to myself, okay, right, you know, it's 3 years now since you've done this. Do you still want to be, you know, riding between the hedges and the walls and everything? I thought, well, okay, look, the entry's in, we'll prep, we'll go there, we'll go out in first practice and just, talking about we, it's like racers do, isn't it? I will see how I feel. So that was in my head, and I went out in the first practice, and like half a lap round, I was just grinning and just going, yeah, this is amazing. And it was just, I was completely back on it and I loved it. And I'm also very involved in Andreas Racing Association. When I moved back to the island, I thought, right, because I'd raced with the club quite a lot as a visitor. And I thought, right, okay, now I live here, I'm trying to contribute to it. The club wasn't really in a very great place at that time. And at the end of 2019, the club was not doing very well. And I actually stood up and said, right, okay, guys, to the membership, I said, if you want to put your faith in me, I'll see what I can do. And I got voted in as chairman. So then I had to put my money where my mouth had been, and we got some new people in on the committee, and a few people who've been there before. So like Dave Moffitt is a thread right through this. He's been involved with the club for 20 plus years.
Can you just tell us a little bit about what the club's aim is, I suppose, how it all
right? So Andreas Racing Association is just a grassroots motor racing club. There's various ones across in the UK. Some of them are really quite historical, so things like Bempsey and stuff like that. And then you've got quite small clubs, Auto 66, EMRA, the East Midlands Racing Association. They only race at Mallory, and ARA is a bit like that. We only race at Jerby because it's the only track on the Isle of Man, and we're absolute grassroots level. We have 6 or 7 meetings a year from spring till autumn, and we support local racers and really starting out. So when I started racing, to get your racing licence from the ACU, all you had to do was get an eyesight test, fill a form in and send a cheque. If anyone listening to this can still remember cheques. That was it. It was purely bureaucratic. Nowadays, the world has moved on and you have to do a classroom session and then do what we tend to refer to as race school, but it's not really. Basically, you do some laps on the circuit with a coach behind you, just checking that you're not a danger to yourself and other people. So you have to go through that. Now, the race school on the island, which is run by a group of fellas, I can name check them, Gary Radcliffe and Dave Bosendorfer and Joey Higginbottom now, they've all raced the Manx Grand Prix, and I think Johnny's won a Manx Grand Prix, you know, so these guys have got history. More than 20 people get their new licences through those coaches and through the club at Jerpy each year. So we've got this feeder of new novice riders coming on, and one of our most popular classes at Jerby is what we call a novice and clubman event. So basically you can ride whatever bike you've got. The restriction is you can't be a national license holder, because the way the ACU licenses go, you start off as a novice, then you can upgrade once you've done so many finishes. I think you need to get 10 finishes, 10 separate meetings. Please don't quote me on this because I'm not reading the regs right now. But then you upgrade to a clubman, which means you don't need your orange bib anymore. And then to upgrade to the next one, you need to be within a certain percentage of the winner's time. So you need to demonstrate that you've actually got some pace, and then you can upgrade to a national. Our novice and clubman class is really well subscribed. We typically have getting on for 30 starters on that. In fact, not this year just gone, but the year before, we had too many people in the class, in that the track is only licensed to have 32 start a race, and we had something like 35 or 36. So we had to run an A and a B heat to even get everybody on the grid. It was fantastic. But even this year, it's a bit under the 32, but we're getting 28, 30 people on their bikes. So it's a full-on grid. And these are guys who are all learning their craft, you know, getting the laps under their belt, learning how to race and how to go fast. And that leads on to the next thing, is from that, we've got such a great pipeline of riders coming through to compete at the Manx Grand Prix and the TT. So this year, Joe Yearsley and Marcus Simpson, both former clubman champions at ARA, you know, really set the Manx Grand Prix on fire as well. But it would be unfair to just mention those guys. There was at one point, I think it was in the senior Grand Prix race, which Joe won and Marcus was second in. There was one point, the guy in third, which I think was Jamie Williams. So we had actually, during the race, top three people in the race were ARA former alumni. And those guys sometimes still ride with us, you know. The Manx Grand Prix this year, there was Jamie and Marcus. There was Dave Rigby. There's Mark Colvin as well. He had some top 10 finishes. Darren Creer. Dan Sayle was out on a solo as well as being a sidecar passenger at the TT. Paul Cassidy was out there. Chris Moffitt is one of our youngsters. And also at the other end of the scale, there's a fellow called Dave Madsen-Migdal, who has got the record for, I'm sure, the most TT starts and I think the most TT finishes as well. And he still rides at Jerby, and he's even older than I am, you know. So, you know, he still pulls his leathers on and gets out there. And there's nothing about road racing that Dave doesn't know as well. I am genuinely really, really proud at the way the riders who've come through the club are going on. And that's just the Manx Grand Prix as well. And then a lot of them are going on to the TT as well.
There must be something. I mean, you say you're involved in marshalling. I don't know if you were out around the course during this MGP, but seeing those riders that you've had such a part in, I suppose, go past must be quite a feeling.
I don't want to claim too much. I mean, I just feel like an enabler. And it's like, because I've been involved in making sure the club is healthy and running and the meetings are there, there's a real sense of pride. I mean, I'm what's called a deputy sector marshal. And I'm actually, this year, I've stepped up to running Parliament Square, taking over from Emma Limerick, who's been doing it for nearly 20 years. So there's nothing she doesn't know about running that place, but she's stepping aside and I'm doing that now. So yeah, and obviously you're hearing the commentary and it's like, oh yeah. And there was definitely Joe and Marcus were having a bit of a dice. And I think, oh, come on guys, you know, one of you's got to bring it home. Yeah, just fantastic.
And I guess from the Andreas Racing Association point of view, having people supporting these people going through that process who really understand that when you want to race on the roads, you are living and breathing it. I mean, you totally get that more than anyone else would.
Well, yes, that's true. But also, you know, I've lived here 5 years now, but I know I'll never be Manx. But, you know, I'm massively invested in this, living in this island. I love the place to bits. And from the other side, you know, if we as an island value the Manx and the TT as part of our heritage, which I think most people do. And then the next question is, well, do you want local riders in those events? And, you know, the obvious answer is, well, yes, of course we do. Well, where are those riders going to learn, where are they going to start out, you know? Because if there isn't a, you know, an entry-level place to start out, learn their chops and that sort of thing, then it's not going to happen. It's like grassroots sport the world over, not just about motorcycle racing. Think about Mark Cavendish. Where did he start riding? He started doing events here on the island as a youngster. And you can go to the absolute top of the tree, but you've got to start somewhere. And so grassroots clubs and sport exist to do that. And it turns out Andreas Racing Association and Jerby is the place on the Isle of Man.
So if somebody's listening to this, Neil, and they're thinking, you know, maybe they've got a bike, or they've, I don't know, grown up watching the TT, but haven't thought about taking the next step, what would be the logical next step for them?
Come and watch. If you come along to a Jerby meeting, obviously it's winter now, so we're not starting up again until next March, but all our dates, if they're not there already, they will be on our website, which is andreasracing.im. And just come along and watch. It's an open paddock, so you can walk around, you can see what people are doing, get yourself a programme, see what the classes for the bikes are and everything. Just get in chatting to people. It really is an absolutely friendly family atmosphere. You say, oh, well, you know, I thought I might give it a go myself, and everyone will be saying, oh yeah, you need to do it, you know, start here or do this, or they'll tell you what they did or how they got into. We've got a couple of entry level classes now, CB500s, which are relatively affordable bikes. They took off in the UK and we've adopted that class here, and now we're getting 10 or 12 bikes out in the class that they go out in. And you can buy a bike, well, I'm going to say, it's going to sound, maybe to some people sound like a lot of money, we can get a bike for a couple of £1,000, which in motorsport terms is actually really cheap. They're very easy on their tyres, so it's not like you have to throw tyres at them for every meeting and that sort of thing. So you can dip your toe in the water. There's a bunch of hurdles you need to go, as I previously described, to get your licence and that sort of thing, but it's not that difficult. And you can have a little bit of a play and see if it's for you. And it's not for everybody, but then once you've tried it, you'll know.
And are there sidecar opportunities as well?
Absolutely. And I'm quite, I've never been on a sidecar, and I need to
Yet?
Fix that.
Are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I need to fix that somehow, some way. The sidecar community on the island is really close to my heart, because running a sidecar is so much harder than racing a solo. They are all purpose-built machines. They're incredibly alien. You know, nobody really knows how they work until you're trying to get on one and try and work it and everything. If you ride a motorbike on the road, then you know how a bike works. And if you want to go car racing, well, I know how a car works. A sidecar is just right out there. They are really difficult to keep going. You know, they stress the engine so much. The tyres are really... I was talking to Craig Melvin, and he said the set of tyres, obviously three of them for his outfit, best part of £1,000. You know, it's big bucks. And there is a really dynamic sidecar community on the island. And I've actually, if you think about the TT this year, there were only 24 starters in the TT class. And I know the ACU and the organisers are going to have to do some work to get that class back to full strength. But of those 24, four of them were local crews. So that's a hell of a percentage. We're fighting way above our weight, batting above our average in terms of that. And, you know, obviously we've got Dave Molyneux, is a very proud Manxman. He's won the most sidecar TTs ever, and he still races it. And he's nearly as old as I am as well. So him and Dan Sale were out in the TT this year. And Dave, and I hope he won't mind me saying this, he did his first race with Andrews Racing Association. Don't believe it was at Jerby, because we were using some other tracks there back in those days. That was when he was 16 years old in 1980. And he still comes out with and races with the club when he wants to get out and get an outing. There's Darren Hope and Ellie Bumfrey. There's Mike Jackson and Jake Roberts were out in the TT this year. And as I previously mentioned, Craig Melvin and Stewie Christian as well. And those guys are in the ARA paddock as well. And there's a bunch of others on them. So sometimes, I mean, it's not a huge grid, but sometimes we get seven or eight sidecars out there, which for a little club out of Jerby is not bad going.
And we talk about people who may be interested in taking part themselves, coming up and having a walk around, but it's open to members of the public as well?
Absolutely,
because it is a long winter for people who love
it. It is a long winter.
Routing.
Well, we live here. We know what we mean by the phrase long winter, don't we? But, you know, once people get Christmas out of the way, then they're already planning towards the next season. And, you know, on the first week in January, March isn't far away. And we've got test days in March and racing in... Gosh, I'm thinking about our dates now. I think our first race is in April. Really, we haven't set the prices for next year, but it's a few quid to get in with a programme and everything. But the thing I will pitch is if you buy a... we've got a membership of the club. You can buy what we call a supporters membership. And if you buy that, that gets you entry into our events for the entire season. So if you want to support the club, and actually, I think as soon as you come to your third race, then your quid's in terms of what it's cost you. So I'll put that out there as well for locals. And we do get quite decent turnout, really. You know, we take some money on the gate. Paddock is open. You can walk around. You can talk to the people you know. You can see what's going on. And then you can get right close and watch the racing as well.
Neil, it's been fascinating talking to you. And, you know, you may not be racing in the TT or the MGP anymore, but it's still clear that it's absolutely something that you're so passionate about.
Yeah, it really is. And if that ever goes, then I'm going to step away from it, because I think you've got to carry that into the event. And the thing I haven't mentioned, which will seem like a bit of a mission, so I'm going to cover it now, because we talked about the sidecar cruise. I've talked about the Manx Grand Prix, which in terms of progression is where the club's riders tend to go on for as well. But then they go on to the TT, and I absolutely must mention a few of our guys who've acquitted themselves really well the TT. So I'm going to mention three club champions. So basically these guys who have won the open class at Jerby, Jamie Kringle, Ryan Kringle, they're brothers. They're both so fast. I think Ryan has won it I'm so sorry if I get this wrong. I think Wyon has won that championship more than anyone else now. And also a fellow called Mikey Evans as well. He's also a former club champion. All three of those guys done really well at the TT. Jamie had his debut in 2022 and did really, really well. And Ryan had his debut in 23 as well. And the both of them just were fantastic. Mike had some great TT outings as well. But I should also mention, you know, as I've mentioned Dave Madsen Migdal as well. He's there every year. He's always in the start list. Paul Cassidy has been going faster and faster. Gareth Arnold is another ARA rider as well. Tony Redmond and Tony and Paul are both involved in organising the club as well. They're on the committee as well as, they're prepping their bikes to get out the TT. You know, because it's the Isle of Man, we've got this straight line through dipping your toe in the water at Derby, going fast at Derby, going to the Manx Grand Prix, and then going to the TT and beyond. And I think, actually, I've just remembered this, Mikey Evans is actually at the Macau Grand Prix right now. So, you know, we're just this little island, but, you know, people can cut their teeth here and go as far as their dream takes them.
And you're part of that dream.
Very proud to just make this little contribution.
This Journey to a Dream podcast has been brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Visit their website, kawasaki-insurance.co.uk, to find out how you can get covered.
I can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.